Okay, today is April 4th and it's 7:16 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, and this is the first session of four. Who are you? So welcome everyone, and thank you, Daniel, and we'll let you take it from here.
All right. Well, one thing that I want to state is that at times when I've tried to do a seminar session to get to the root of this, many times what happens, at times it could take a legal direction, but I don't want people to not take into account that there is only one book that could really explain what's going on right now in this moment in the world that you're existing with. And it's the Bible. It's under attack. And if the legalists have their way about it, which are those who promote the concept of humanism, which in definition denies that there is a God and denies the fact that he's in charge, and it denies the divinity of Jesus Christ in its essence and definition, and says man will perfect himself on his own, well, then you could truly understand that why that kind of direction, which is associated with legal, is against the truth of what we'll be sharing with you today. So we're going to start off with a very, very simple expose on who are you. It's all in a name. An ancient book called the Book of Proverbs stated, a good name is rather to be chosen than great riches, and great favor rather than silver and gold. And that's from Proverbs 22, verse 1, the King James Version. The Black's Law Dictionary, revised fourth edition, defines legal name as a person's name consists of one or more Christian names and one surname or family name. The Gage Dictionary defines surname as follows: name added to a person's real name. The above definition clearly states a surname is not defined to be true or real, a real name, and is therefore fictitious. Most people are not aware of the origin in regards to the legal surnames they have become accustomed to using in daily life. Historically, surnames were introduced in the 1200s for the purpose of the census, the draft, and taxation. In fact, in the mid-20th century, the government of Canada imposed legal surnames on their northern Inuit population who had no historical or traditional custom of the use of surnames. The government of Canada called this imposition of naming Project Surname. The Dictionary of Canadian Law, 5th edition, defines agnomination as a surname, an additional name or title. These surnames or agnominations are referred to in Black's Law Dictionary, revised 4th edition, under the definition of nomen, Latin meaning name, to be descriptive titles, the name or style of a class or genus of persons or objects, a debt or a debtor. Could it be we are ignorant of the law or the legal system designating a bearer of a surname to be a debtor? Lawyers frequently quote the Latin maxim, ignorance of the law is no excuse. The legal civil system of law requires that a person ignorant of the law be registered from birth as a debtor, or there be no one to collect the fines, fees, and taxes from. There is hope, as there is a civil law maxim that lawyers seldom quote when they proudly state ignorance of the law is no excuse. This is the Latin maxim, ignorance of the fact is an excuse. Therefore, if you consent to remain in ignorance and denial of knowledge that the legal surname labels and brands you as a public debtor, you have no excuse in the eyes of the law for failing to pay for its licensed use. there is an important case that took place in a court of justice in November 2011, which stated in the case of Regina versus Paparella, there is no provision in the legal system which allows an individual to transfer his given names to anyone, whether to a person, a corporation, or a trust. Any document purporting to achieve that goal is in and of itself invalid, and having such a document notarized does not validate the document. In short, an individual's God-given Christian name is private, non-legal, not public. Your given name does not belong to the legal state or any secular nation. Private means not belonging to the state. The given name is non-transferable, non-conveyable, and unalienable. The legal system induces you to consent to taking on the legal debtor's surname by assignment and assumption as a licensed trespasser. The only part of the civil birth registration name that is deemed legal is the surname, not your given name. Your given name is a fact. The legal surname is a legal fiction. Black's Law Dictionary, revised fourth edition, defines the word dummy as follows. One who holds legal title for another, a straw man. In other words, a dummy is an individual bearing a legal surname title as a surety. The legal state dummy cannot speak without you breathing your given name into the state fictitious legal surname as a ventriloquist. This legal dummy needs you to make it speak and give it life. The dummy legal person is in essence an actor or individual wearing a mask. The 1828 Noah Webster's Dictionary defines person, Latin word persona, a mask, primarily used by actors on a stage. Would it not make sense, if you were in legal control, to see how many dummies acting as a legal person wearing a surname mask would further consent to wear or put on a government mandated COVID mask? Can you really suffocate a legal dummy with a mask? Men and women either walk in the truth of their spiritual creator or in the legal fiction controlled and invented by the father of the lie and his devil's advocate bar association lawyers and societies. John 8 verse 32 states, "The truth shall make you free." It does not state that legal fiction will do that. The elective choice is up to you. It's either truth or face the consequences. So we have a really good beginning to this because if we don't understand what goes on in a name, we're kind of spinning our wheels on this whole thing. Could you imagine all the time trouble with all the freedom groups that are out there? They're everywhere. They got pods everywhere. They come some through more of a medical twist, that it's all based on medical, you know, misinformation. But if the whole control factor is really based on a name, then how are you going to do anything in this world that we exist in without a name? You fill it in all the time. You fill it in boxes. Unquestionable, you just fill them in. They say place it in there as it is because it's required. When you understand that a legal person or a legal name requires both the truth of your God-given name, God-given Christian name, and then the basically merger with a legal state surname in order to be within the gambits of a member participating, then without seeing this, without seeing that actual direction there, you'd just be walking blindly. So most just automatically assume that the name they were told by their parents to be the name that they would go forward in society with is their name, but they've never questioned it. They didn't look at it that possibly something in that name would not be their name, or possibly something in that name would be their real name. So this is a definitely, I think, the beginning of where the concern comes in. And I'd have to admit, how many people ever questioned, just by a raise of hands, how many people ever questioned their name? And how many maybe never questioned it in reality and just went forward blindly? I'd have to say I was on the second one that I just kind of walked forward blindly. I had assumed that whatever I was told was the truth. And, you know, there's the beginning of investigation. You know, it's there was a little, you know, kind of like site that was dealing with investigation. And it had a little bit of a warning right at the beginning of the beginning of going into an investigation, because we invest a lot of time into a name, correct? How much did we put into a name that we never really investigated? So if I'm blindly working and laboring and I'm depositing all my time and labor into a name that I have not investigated, could that be blind faith? Could that possibly be what happened? So when we look at investigation, one of the unique things that comes up under investigation, it means gathering facts, not assumptions. Okay. Well, when we take on a name that basically comes from a source that is not our real name, we're deemed to be in the world of assumption. So we should look at the word assumption. Black's Law Dictionary, 4th edition, has the word assume. Number one, it is to pretend, to undertake, to engage, promise. It says taking up, receiving, adopting, taking to oneself, or to put on deceitfully, take appearance of, affect, or outwardly seem. Wow. To take on, become bound as another is bound, or put oneself in place of another as to an obligation or liability. Now, when we look at the historical record of legal surnames, they began in around, in our more recent look at history, we'll go back to around the late 1200s. And if you go to the Cambridge study on the permanent family surname, which you can find on the spreadsheet if you're looking for it, if you have a problem, just go on to the chat there and just make note that you would like to know where to find that, if it is your first time looking for that documentation. But there is the study on the permanent family surname. And when you go into the background on surnames, they were originally instituted for three purposes by the legal state: for the purposes of the census, taxation, and the draft. So it makes quite a bit of comprehension, understanding that if I'm taking on a title that is basically not mine, it would bring me into what we call the public. In the United States of America, they have a very, very common name for the average participant in tax or public participation, and they actually call him John Q. Public or John Q. Taxpayer. So I would hope that when you relate to what we just said or what we've established there, that you could understand that last names, what you would bear to be a family name or a last name, would be the public name, which is the tax name. And when we look at the historical record on who we call tax collectors, they were known as publicans. So we have a whole regime in the US that are called Republicans. That's quite of an interesting kind of you know, humorous comment there, because it was bad enough to be a publican than to be a Republican, because we must have reformed something from what it was and then did it again. That's like being tired and being retired. Most people in the system are already tired before they even get to being retired. Not even a humorous chuckle on that. What is up with you guys? So it gives me time to have a little sip of coffee. So,
okay.
Not even a, you know what? I've already warned you about that automatic laugh system.
I know, I'm typing at the same time. I got to stay focused.
Okay. All right. Honest Chuck, it's now your responsibility to have a pre-recorded laugh in there. Okay, so when you really break up the simplicity of a name, there could only be something that would be placed upon you, okay, that would come from the source of where you came from, which would belong to the control of that source. We refer to that as your God-given name, your God-given Christian name, which would say where you birthed from. So that's the reality, because it would be hard pressed, you know, to prove that our existence came from nothing, because we don't ever claim that in anything to do with even within the concept of legal society. If a carpenter builds a chair, then the carpenter is considered to be the source where the chair came from. So we'd never believe that the chair came from nothing. We'd believe it came from the source, even though the carpenter is using material that came from a source, not only the source that produced the material he built the chair from, but also he himself came from the source that gave him the energy and the life source to build the chair. So when we get into the world of legal, then we start getting into a little bit more in the direction of what we call not creation, we call it recreation. Because legal are recreationalists, they're entertainers. They like to provide an entertainment of recreation of where you came from. And therefore we get into a lot of crazy concepts of imagination, dealing with evolution, you name it, there's a theory. You don't ever hear it's the theory of creation, but you do hear the theory of evolution, and theories are not provable. So everything that we're dealing with in legal title is just an imagination of a legal system when we start to look at how it operates, and then we can go back to the source, look at the definitions, and start to see what it is. So we're going to go a little bit of in depth in a name. So when you look at a Collins Gage, this is a Collins Gage Canadian paperback dictionary. And, you know, we're just looking at what they would define. This was in all, you know, many of the schools. So we go to surname. We should just look at this, because you simply to go in and dive into the politics of who I am, what I'm obligated to, what's going on around me, how it affects everything I have, property I've claimed, all those things. How does that make any sense if I do everything in a name and I don't even comprehend what's in a name? So if we don't get to the source of where this is, or the nerve in the tooth, we're wasting our time. And that's where we find most of the sovereignty freeman groups. They just jumped ahead. They go on theories that really have no substantiation. They'll try to tell you that your whole name is based on whether it's spelled in all uppercase letters, capital letters, or it's done in upper lowercase, and that's going to bring you your freedom. What a bunch of crap. Oh, did I say that? Was I being too subtle? I hope not, because I'm here to tell you the truth of it. Nonsense you hear on those sites, there's many of them. Romley Stewart's all over there on that one. When it's all based on upper lowercase letters, it's all based on that you have a capital name And therefore, at that point, that's going to be your salvation. That may be a little bit of a symbol in there, but that's not the answer to salvation. So we go into surname, and this is in this concise Collins dictionary. It says, a name added to one's real name. Actually, that's far better than another version of a dictionary, because they have the Canadian Gage dictionary. This is the Canadian College. This is Collins Gage Canadian paperback, but this is more right to the point. It just says a name added to one's real name, period. So if it is a name added to one's real name, wouldn't that really just bring it into fiction? Wouldn't the surname just be a fictitious name? And if I look back to the history of surnames, where do they begin? Do they go right back to the beginning? Did the earliest version of anything to do with explaining the creation of man, did it have legal surnames occurring? Did Adam and Eve bear legal surnames in the Bible account? You don't even find it occurring even in other religious beliefs that were occurring trying to explain the creation. So all of a sudden we start to embrace this. We don't question it. How many people, I'm just on an average, questioned the authenticity to the legal surname they were walking around with? You put it in tons of documents. So how many people questioned it when you went into first use? Okay. How many didn't question it? Can you understand where we're going on this now? Could there be a problem? And this is what we need to see, because if we don't see this, we'll never get to the bottom of the foundation of what's going on, because we kind of ended up in a legal construct. I wrote it on a board. It's just over from me right now. Put this on a couple weeks ago. I said the whole legal construct of identity, the whole legal construct foundation what we build a house on, we'll call it the house name, is built on this family name, of which family in its original origin, in its meaning, was taken from the Roman meaning, adopted into the English language, not the English language coming up with its own definition. So most people in the English language will automatically be, so I'm so proud of my family name, as if they're better than everybody else with a legal last name. Now, when we know that a legal last name or a surname comes from a nomen, meaning no men, because it's in fiction, a debt or a debtor, because debt or a debtor does not occur in nature. There is no such thing as debt or a debtor. Squirrels do not rent out trees to squirrels, but it appears people do. We'll actually cut down the trees, build homes, put them on places, and then we will automatically start literally separating that into some crazy construct of thought that now we're going to start charging for the use of it. The earth, everybody got as a gift from God, but now we divide it up, and somehow someone now says this portion of property with an illusionary line and concession and registration number is now property that if you claim it, you pay. No questions asked, other than people get upset about how the price increases, but more than not, they don't get down to the bottom of how does that happen? Why am I paying to live on the free gift of God? Is there something I'm doing that's placing me in a category of being a legal dummy? One who holds legal title for another out of Black's Law, 4th edition? Is it possible that I didn't know that a legal surname meant a debt or a debtor? Did someone just not fill me in on that? I'd have to say, let's look at it. Could you imagine going to grade one in public school education? I have my good friend, the teacher, in the background there. She knows. Can you imagine actually telling grade one students that their last name meant they were a debt or a debtor operating in society at the mercy of the government that dictates and writes all the rules? And if you wear that name consensually, you have to pay to play with that name. Could you imagine starting off school education with that one? Yeah, how do you think, how far would things get in the world of deception if you started that at grade one level? By grade eight, if you kept on putting that in the minds of the children, how many of them would be ready to go, wow, when can I get my first job with that name? When can I go to work for a name that's not mine, that's owned by the state, and I can spend all my time investing all my energies in that name that I have no control over whatsoever, no protection, there's no honesty involved in it, and it can be pulled away from me at any given time? How many people would have joined that one? Well, we're going to go into a few little categories here. It's almost hard what I can do in a matter of an hour and a half. I went a little longer last week on the last session for the month. But, you know, it's interesting. It's really summed up in the word delusion. It shows up in the Canadian Law Dictionary. And if you're in another jurisdiction, as far as country, the United States, Europe, it wouldn't matter. The law is the law. It's running under the same construct run by lawyers. And the word delusion shows up in this, and I think this sums it up. A delusion is a false belief originating in the imagination without foundation in fact. And the person under the delusion is incapable of being reasoned out of that belief. Okay, so when you, I don't know how many people have tried to share, if you've been on this before, how many people have tried to share this discussion with other people and found they just wanted to go like this, la, 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 I don't want to hear the law. How many people just ran up and said, thank you so much for telling me this. I'm so happy. I want to go further. I want to be on this Zoom, even though we have right now 36, which we should have 2 million minimum on this. We wouldn't be able to handle the amount of people who'd be coming on this Zoom if it was really spreading, because it appears truth doesn't work in the world of falsehood. That's the problem. And because the whole world is based on this legal fiction, which is based on the concept of to deceive. Now, when we deceive someone, deceive shows up in this dictionary. This is the Dictionary of Canadian Law, 5th edition. And the word deceive has the following definition: to induce, persuade, or cause a person to believe that something which is false is true. Okay. Now I'm going to take you to the word birth name. If we don't get this in our brains, we're going to lose. We will lose our lives, because the only reason this is evidently available, and we may not have seen it, but it's there. It's there because it's a warning. Because God runs the rules on this, the source of life, and therefore it's fair as long as I've let you know. So if I didn't let you know and I held it back, but it's there, this isn't hidden. I found it. Do I look like some university professor? Well, possibly. I guess some may look like me. I don't know. But in general, the word of truth sometimes wears a suit. So you generally find most people that are going to lie to you wearing suits, they usually put on the legal lawsuit because they love to pursue something that is false and get you into the game because they profit from it. So we look at the word birth name, and it isn't probably what you would have thought it to be. It says birth name is what? It's only the legal surname of a person as recorded in the birth registration records of the jurisdiction where the person was born. Okay, now we're into a whole field of leading us down the trail of the word person. And person was a mask. So we're going to look at the definition of person. Now, what's so great about the word person, you can find the definition of this in Wikipedia, of all places, that will tell you what the word person means. So I'm going to go to person in Wikipedia. And we go to persona, because that's basically the Latin version of person. And it says a persona is a strategic mask of identity in public. The public image of one's personality. So now you're wearing a mask that reflects a persona, a mask. Okay, so you have a mask that reflects that. And it says it is the social role that one adopts, or simply a fictional character. It is also considered an intermediary between the individual and the institution. Well, it appears it's a mask. It's not real. It's something that someone wears on a stage. So it's not based on truth. It's what you would wear to be identified as a member participating in what we call legal society. So you would need a legal mask. So we can go a little further on the background of names. When we go into what is, you know, in law, people may have a hard time with this. I kind of get a few cringing viewpoints, because if you were never raised with a belief in God of the Christian Bible, you most likely may have other thoughts. But the concept, or at least the rules in the world of name, deal with that you're the first name that you bear in first place is a God-given Christian name. And that's the way it's been established worldwide under everything that anybody operates on. So it doesn't matter if you're a Hindu or a Muslim or a Buddhist or whatever belief system you have. There's even people that say they're an atheist, but they still bear a Christian name. That's quite interesting. You know, and you know, we'll expose a few false beliefs in a second when we go through this, because things will come out when we're trying to break down the name. But we go into one of the earliest dictionaries, Samuel Johnson's dictionary of 1755. The word Christian name pops up, and it says, Christian name is the name given at the font or baptism, distinct from the gentilitious name or surname. Distinct means different from. So we go in the same dictionary, and we go over to Gentile, which is the root of gentilitious, and it says it is one of an uncovenanted nation, one who knows not the true God. And then the second definition for someone bearing a Gentile name or being known as a Gentile by this legal name added to one's real name, it says it is a person of rank. Well, you know, it's interesting when you go a little further on the definition of person, it gets a little bit weird, because persona is also, or legal person, we go into the dictionary of law, the fifth edition Canadian Law Dictionary, and it has the word persona showing up, person, and what is the main definition? And it states as following. It says, person is the only legal person known to our law is the corporation, the body corporate. Now, that's a fancy word for saying dead body, because corporation and body corporate are quite interesting when you break it down. Corporation has the root of corpus, which means body, dead. And when we say body corporate, we're just saying dead body. When we say corporation, we have to remember that corp is dead body, or rate means to speak. So it's dead body speaking. So when the Samuel Johnson dictionary said that it was a person of rank as the second definition, beyond one identified as an unbeliever, will they be dead according to God, their creator, because of their belief that's contrary to truth? And they would be a person of rank, and personas are dead bodies, and rank really tells you it stinks, it smells, because a body goes rank when it's dead. So everything in that world is about preserving a dead body. And if you don't believe me, you will realize that the plot began at the beginning when you got caught in the plot. And then they try to get you to buy the plot at the end in the cemetery. And they'll stick you 6 feet under. But uniquely, the funeral director even tries to preserve and prevent the dead body corporate from actually decomposing. So they like to keep it a little bit freshly ranked for a while. Possibly it may last like that 6 feet underground in a coffin in a box for a number of years. In fact, they've even learned how they can make money just forensically digging up bodies and continually examining them for some type of benefit to the legal society in the world of commerce. So I don't think we've really seen how much business goes on with the body, but there you go. There's a good definition of it. We go into the Oxford 20 volume set. If you ever get a chance on one of those, there's 20 volumes to the Oxford language, the English language dictionary. So 20 volumes of this. This is just one of the volumes, and it goes into a usage of Christian name. I'll share that with you. Most have never had a chance to have a dictionary with this detail in it. But Christian name, it says the name given, of course, at the christening, distinguished from the family name or surname. And then it says, when a man is made a spiritual peer, he loses his surname. When a temporal, his Christian name. So interesting, when a man is made spiritual, it means he's come to truth. What is the awareness of what's really going on? He would lose the surname, but he says when he becomes a templar, a temporal, or a, we'll call it a secular activist, someone who's operating under that, his Christian name is lost. Okay, so you can't have both at the same time, though we try to do that in our society. But when we start to divide the two names up, we start to see what's going on. And unfortunately, most people have never ever examined what's going on. They don't read definitions. They don't have dictionaries. They don't look to the beginning. And most people will say, I don't care. I'm going to do what I'm going to do. And I say, well, that's just basically the blind leading the blind. So we have to look a little deeper. And so we're going to go into a very simple subject matter. But one thing I'm going to read you is a warning out of the Bible at Hosea 4, verse 6. And Hosea 4 and 6 states the following. My people are destroyed due to lack of knowledge. Well, that's lack of literacy, because knowledge and literacy are synonyms. So if I do not have knowledge, I probably may not have literacy, and I may not know how to read the warning. And so the best thing that could ever happen is to keep everybody as illiterate as possible. And in fact, in the early days of those that were really playing in charge, most of the time they spoke and they wrote and They preached in Latin and the majority of the population had no understanding. I would say it still continues today. You would be hard pressed not to find the Catholic Church not continuing to speak in Latin so that no one knows what's going on in the pews. But when you look at the actual drugging of society, the most prescription drugs that are prescribed for people to take are written in Latin, and no one questions anything. They just take those things blindly, don't ask any questions because they're listening to a doctor. And don't worry that the word doctor in its abbreviation, when it shows up in Black's Law 4th, DR is an abbreviation for debtor. So it would make sense that the first one to take possession or delivery of this fictitious debtor child bearing a legal surname that you would see in the hospitals. Fact check the ward in the hospitals. They all have little bands on their left wrist to show that their parents abandoned them to the state, the legal state, and now they're a ward of the state in the hospital ward, and they wear a band on their wrist that says, what? Not given name, Christian name, first name. It says baby boy or baby girl, Smith or Taylor, all related to the surname. Did you really perceive this when you were basically operating in there? Has anybody really in focus taken a look at the system for what it is? Or is it just because we never saw it? And sometimes what happens is we don't want to see it at all once it starts bearing the light of what is really underneath all that fiction. And when we start to see the truth that will set us free, sometimes it makes us quite afraid because we've been so raised in the legal fiction that we don't know the difference. In fact, the term legal fiction is defined as in the Dictionary of Canadian Law, 5th edition, as the assumption in law that something which is false is true, which is very similar to the definition in the same dictionary that deals with the word deceive, to induce someone to believe that something which is false is true. So now we're going to go into basically natural rights, because we got to get into what is natural, because, you know, what is natural is real. And what is legal is not. So we're not dealing with a natural body. And people got very concerned, I think, during the COVID. How many people got kind of concerned about their natural body when the COVID was going on and the regulations that were being put against them by the World Health Organization? How many people started to get a little concerned? I would have to think that I could feel the concern out there. I kind of expected what I was going to see, but I could understand the audience that was going to be affected, because how many people would have understood that the legal body corporate, or the last name that they were bearing, was literally an indication that they were in a belief system that allowed a legal system to tell them what to do with not their natural body, the legal body that their truthful name was breathing life into. Because what was happening was the state was only controlling what was theirs. And so they called it public health, right? So how many people have heard the term public health? This is a good question, Eric. How many people have heard the term, oh, it's for the public health? Okay. Well, what's public health? Well, public means tax. So it's talking about tax health. So we run tax health through a system that runs through documents that first begin, Vital Statistics Acts, which is where the birth registration system begins, that eventually issues a birth certificate. They call the foundation identity document, the ID, to be an idiot, a dummy, who doesn't know who he is, And they say, well, we kind of balance out statistically through the census, the draft, and taxation. We use these registration systems to see how many dummies we have. And then if the dummies are going to act in society, I hope this isn't too degrading right now, but if the dummies that act in this society appear to overpopulate, we just thin them out. That's called thinning the herd. So what we did was we go to the greatest amount of non-productive society, which is the older people, and we decide it's best to thin them out because they're really costing us in our magical world of make-believe money that doesn't grow on trees. We're going to basically say statistically in a made-up mathematical equation, there's too many people in that category, so we're going to thin the herd and we'll work our way down. And eventually we'll just deal with it and we'll call it public health, which is tax health. So people don't quite see it that way. I don't think anybody that I was around when I was growing up would have understood public health to be tax health. So if I don't need that many taxpayers anymore, wouldn't be the best thing for me to do is just eliminate them. And what I'll do is I'll just tell them there's this disease out there. We'll call it COVID. And we'll basically deceive people. And the ones who are deceived are called COVIDiots because they live on the planet COVIDiot. And all the COVIDiots basically will walk up with their body, basically bearing what we also identify as a surname, which is known as an arms, because a lot of coat of arms were based on legal surname history. And they'll just basically walk up with their arms and take a shot in their arm. Now, I never realized people could be this stupid, so I didn't realize most of the populace just walk up and take a shot. You didn't even have to worry about it. It's like walking up to the execution squad. Why don't you just walk up there and there'll be a number of people. Instead of you being shot on the field, they'll actually bring you to the nurse and the nurse will give you the shot this time. Boy, I could be a really irritating individual, right? Don't worry, I irritate myself. So we're going to go, not even a chuckle. Guys are a hard audience, man. At least out of 37 people, one laugh. Hey, come on now. Not one of you has some way of putting in a laughter. Come on. Nowhere? Todd, you're fired.
That's twice I put it up there.
Okay. All right. It's because we're muted. All right. So anyways, natural rights and legal rights. Boy, they didn't hide much on this one. This is Wikipedia also. Natural rights, listen to this, and this should just tell the whole thing. We could shut down the seminar after actually saying this, because this totally splits the whole game. Because they have natural rights and legal rights, and people think they're one and the same. Because people say, oh, my human rights are being violated. I go, oh, we got a problem because human comes from legal. That term does not come from natural. That's why the big game is now under the United Nations, who are part of the World Health Organization. Their big thing is you now have human rights. We'll even write them up for you. We'll tell you what you get. Hold on a second here. Didn't I have it before you wrote them? So anyways, we get to natural rights and it says natural rights are those that are not dependent on the laws or customs of any particular culture or government, and so are universal, fundamental, and unalienable. They cannot be repealed, what? By human laws, which are legal laws, though one can forfeit their enjoyment through one's actions, such as by violating someone else's rights. Natural law is the law of natural rights. So just think about it. The only way you could forfeit or be a problem in it, okay, where you don't have your natural rights anymore, is you'd end up forfeiting them by being legal. Because they just said that that's basically where the link goes in. Now we're going to get into legal rights. The next definition says, legal rights are those that are bestowed or granted onto a what? A person by a given legal system. They can be modified, repealed, and restrained by human laws. Okay, so it means I can just do whatever I give you in legal rights, remove them. I can modify them, repeal them, and restrain them. It says the concept of positive law is related to the concept of legal rights. Well, very interesting. When you go into some of the early writers that just started to separate these concepts, you can get into John Locke. And John Locke was a writer, okay, who dealt with the subject matter of rights. In fact, he was involved in the writing of the basically the U.S. basically Declaration of Independence. And just to listen to what he said on this subject matter, you may be surprised. John Locke said that a child could not be a government. He's talking about a legal government subject, because subjectship, or being a subject, must be based on the tacit or explicit consent of an individual who has reached the age of rational discretion. Locke insisted a child is born a subject of no country and government. He is under his father's tuition and authority till he come to age of discretion, and then he is free and at liberty what government he will put himself under and what body politic he will unite himself to. Now, when you look at this, the reason what really John Locke is saying that a child can't enter a contract, so therefore he couldn't be part of legal citizenship, and therefore a legal state surname that is awaiting a child to push play on when they reach age of election, they could never have been bound to from the beginning because they could never enter the contract. So therefore, it's just kind of an assumption that's played through some really nonstop public education, which basically usually relies on imprinting the child from very young. And therefore, they usually get them into the public school education at a young age, sometimes younger than you think. And then what they do is they eventually get them onto the school bus, the public transportation system. The public transportation system generally picks them up at the road. They make their way to the school. Then they get their little recess or coffee break at around 10. And then 12 noon, they get the next break, which is the lunch break. And then 2 o'clock, the next recess or coffee break. And then by 3 to 4 o'clock, bell rings, boom, back onto the public transit, and back home they go. Okay. And then it didn't get done enough there. Now they have to go home and do homework. I said, well, that's kind of interesting. Wouldn't that be schoolwork? But they're sending them home to do homework, but that's not really homework at that point. That's schoolwork. And why wasn't it done during all the 8 hours that I had the child? Would be a good question, correct? Why couldn't they, with 8 hours in that day, get it all done? It's to keep the mind continuing all day long with that basically control factor of imprinting, so that they never have time to think, because they're going to control them with the concept of hours. I'm going to have you controlled by hours, because you will work with a name that is not your name. It's a name that the state controls for the purposes of the census, the draft, and taxation. And I want to know what you're doing with that name. So I'm going to basically rate it by its hourly use. In fact, lawyers do it all the time. They can bill you for the use of that name, that they give you consultation for it. Did you wonder how they put their billings in? That's how they do it. They're billing because they're able to bill you for the use of a legal name that's not your name, that they are in a society that controls that legalistic concept. So they work by hours, and then you will work by hours. And then when you really look at it, the unique symbol, when you take the letters down and you start to draw them on a board, so you draw an H that looks like a seat, and then you have O-U-R-S, you start to realize the guys that control the hours are sitting down on that H hieroglyph symbol. That's a letter that tells you a message, and they're basically saying your hours. And if you think not, then you haven't been in that system too long, because I couldn't collect on you as a legal authority unless you're using something that doesn't belong to you. I could only tax you for a name that's not yours. So therefore, I like to fee and fine you. I even get you to even say that you feel fine instead of well. Now, if you were healthy, you'd be feeling well. You wouldn't be feeling fine because you don't find fine in a well where there's water. And you don't get water, you don't get a fine from a well. So we've been so basically imprinted with this public educated imprinting that at times we don't know whether or not the average individual could break through the scarring. So I think we'd have to be honest with ourselves right now in this group. What would you feel would be the percentage rate of success when someone's been imprinted to believe that something which is false is true, that a name that's not theirs is their name? How do you think, or what do you think the odds are once they've accumulated a massive amount of legal title property under that name, would they ever get out of this mess? What do you think? Out of, let's just say, would the legal system have about an 80 to 90% success rate, or probably close to 100? I'm going to go with 100 right now if I was making my vote on this right now. I would have to say almost 100% would have been deceived by this. And don't feel bad because it's surrounded you your entire life. It's not like it just happenstanced. It was there. The odds are your parents did it. You're going to do it. Their parents did it. And it, so on and so on. So to break that directive path or that scarring or removing the cataracts off of the eyes, taking off the shades that are shading the light of truth to come into our eyes to see would take a bit of time. And therefore, it's not something we want to beat ourselves up on. I think it's just something that we're going to need to digest slowly. And that's why we've done these sessions. I felt, you know, at times, the reason I did the live sessions, even though I have many recorded ones that you can access, it was to have contact with people because we do need to make a reality check on things, and talking with someone live I think has a lot more impact than just listening at times to a recording. I think the recordings are wonderful and I'm glad that we've had them and I'm glad they're shared for everybody and certainly make use of them. But for me, this is a labor of love. This is not a labor of money. Certainly there's no business in this, and I can guarantee you that. So, and thank you those that have supported the actual, directive towards the literacy education, and it's leading to, that site being, brought up onto the net, sooner than we think. It's going to be up there, and it's going to be really great to share books and literacy on how to reach the documentation that we've shared with everybody, because everybody needs to at least have a library of books that make sense, that actually can tell them what's going on, than a vast amount of, we'll call it, legal fiction that's out there. It's surprising, but yet not surprising, that we walk into most libraries and the majority of the libraries based on fiction, not based on truth or documenting truth. And the world that we're surrounded with is definitely a reflection, of that type of society. So very interesting. John Locke also made, he had, of course, the document that dealt with citizenship without consent, but he also made a comment. And it was interesting because I read that in the introduction, "Who are you?" And John Locke literally reflects a court case in Ontario that I'd been involved with that was Paparella versus Regina versus Paparella, that was dealing with basically the use of the legal title surname. But it did state about the jurisdiction of one's individual God-given Christian name. And it said that there was no provision in the legal system that allowed an individual to convey or transfer or a lien put into debt one's given name to anyone, whether to a person, a corporation, or a trust. Interestingly, when you research the Office of the Registrar General that registers birth, deaths, and marriages, they are deemed in law to be a legal person, a corporation, and a legal trust. And it's saying that you could never convey that or a lien it to them. But the problem is people don't realize what they're looking to do is have an unsuspecting, unwary individual that is going to be deceived to actually voluntarily accept, take on, and bear a legal surname that means they're a legal debt or a debtor for the legal collective society that they now become a member of. So they can pay for their common share of the common debt. John Locke wrote, "The supreme power of a state cannot take from any man any part of his property without his own consent. And any law that purports to do so is of no validity." Well, that was the words in the justice for the Regina versus Paparella, that there was no provision in the legal system that allows an individual to transfer their given names to anyone, whether to a person, a corporation, or a trust. And any document purporting to do so would in and of itself be invalid, and notarizing a copy of this document does not give it any more validity. So we're talking about there were people there, even though John knew about the law because he had the key of knowledge, being the lawyers of the background that most were, that got involved in all the writings for every legal construct that was out there. I'm going to read a couple comments just for a moment here, and we'll get into natural in a second. But here's a book and good read, never shared it on previous as far as like for session ones. And there's a book, and I just, you want to make note of it. I believe that we have noted this online. Todd, we have this online now, the one on by the writer Moody.
Yeah.
Sophie. Okay. So that's up there. So if you're looking for it, you will be able to find it. It's called The Meanings and Derivations of Christian Names. Now, this book was written in the 1860s. And here's a couple comments out of the book, just to give you a little bit of a flavor, what is based on a name. It says Christian names, which would be your first name or given name, a fact, not a fiction, in the house of God are carried back, as it were, to the infant days of history. Surnames are not acknowledged there. When as individuals we stand before the Lord and Maker of all, the conventionalities of the world are lost sight of, and we are known only by our individual names.
What page are you quoting that?
That is page 81. Of the book.
Okay, thanks.
Now we go to it has a comment in chapter 5, page 90, but it deals with the word assumption. It says the assumption of a new individual name. That means that would not be the name that you were given by your parents. It used the word assumption because in law that already we've gone over in Black's Law, which meant to pretend, to take on deceit. So be careful on assumption, because investigation, the first thing is to collect facts, not assumptions. The assumption of a new individual name has always supposed the assuming of a new manner of life, or at least the entering into some new and important phase of life. I guess that would be, especially if you're entering into the legal construct, because now you've gone down a new life that's going to bring you into debtorship, not into what God had in store for you with a non-assumptive name or a non-legal name. So then we go on to another quote. It says, the Church of England has always considered, this is on page 91 of the same book, The Church of England has always considered Christian names unalienable, and in England, even before the Reformation, we read of the severe penance being inflicted on a woman who had changed her son's baptismal name of Edward for that of Henry. We change our surnames or family names, but our individual or font, which is baptismal names, as they were once called, are ours unchangeably, ours by the grace of God. Let us seek to have them written by the finger of God, where none can blot them out in the book of life. Could the legal surname idea in the Vital Statistics Acts be noting an implication that you're going to be in the book of the dead body corporate of society? Then we go into page 92, and in the same book, it gets into dealing with a scenario or a little bit of going back in time to the account of Hebrew young men who had been brought under the captivity of a pagan Babylonian heathen nation under King Nebuchadnezzar. And basically, it goes into giving you a picture that's a little bit different now, because it says our next picture of faraway times is a very different one. It is in sorrow, not in joy, that this change of name takes place. The new name is not as a pledge of favor from a gracious God, that would be like our Christian names, but it is as a heavy chain pressing about a prisoner's neck. It is as an act of sacrilege abhorrent to a heart that is devout. By their new names, the four Hebrew youths, captive to the king of Babylon, were dedicated to their conqueror's false gods. So one of the things that the Babylonians did, they changed the names of the individuals that they conquered and gave them a Babylonian name to remove them from who they were. And it says, Daniel, signifying God is my judge, was exchanged for Belteshazzar. Bel has formed a prophet or wise man. Hananiah, signifying the gracious gift of Jehovah, a synonym with John, was exchanged for Shadrach, signifying royal, king's own or belonging to the king. Mishael or Michael, the strength of God, for Meshach, belonging to Shishak, an Assyrian goddess, and Azariah, the help of Jehovah, for Abednego, servant of Nego or Nebo, the god or planet Mercury. So anyways, a little bit of a background there to give you some understanding. Could it be that we're involved in a Babylonian empire that believes in legalism, something that's contrary to truth, brings us into imaginations, that brings you before the magi straits, magicians who cast a spell on you and then hope that you stay under that spell so you will continue to be a debt or a debtor? Could that be? Is it by chance that the magistrates actually invest in penitentiaries for their pension funds? Because the fact is that they benefit from those who don't know who they are, who enter into a prison in their own minds because they're in a compound name, a prison name that they entered into with nothing more than a stroke of the pen. Because the minute that you acted on an error or a presumption that was indicating or implying that you were a debtor, you became that debtor. And then it took a little bit of further work because they needed your picture and they needed your signature on it to finalize the consent. So now you gave face value to their debtor system. And then they would just basically rate you as a piece of merchandise. We call it cast rating in the movie, because you have no authorized reproduction. no unauthorized reproduction under copyright law that the state basically controls under you basically operating under these legal debtor foundation identity documents, because the issuer controls the copyright on the name that you bear legally. Is it making sense now that the system can do what it does to the population now that you know this? And if you didn't gather it all in the first, just go back to all the sessions. You just hear it over and over, and then I can haunt you in your sleep, and you won't be able to get me out of your mind until you get out of this delusionary obsession to try to be something you're not. You'll never escape this without coming to truth, because the truth will make you free. So we've done this across many of the sessions trying to help people. Just even the look at how the birth certificates operate. When you look at just the definitions under just name, most of these little foundation identity birth certificates, we call them BCs, which is interesting, because a birth name is only referring to a legal surname, which is a debt or a debtor, but that would be contrary to the message that came upon a very important event, which would have led to a Christian name or a God-given name, because God gave his only begotten son so that you wouldn't be in debt, that you would have basically been debt free, free of sin, free of guilt, free of fine, free of fee. But the legal system works contrary to that. We'll get over and into that more in detail on the second, the third, and the fourth sessions. But for the time being, it's interesting that the birth certificates generally have what we call the word name on it. In Canada, we have French and English, so we have nome and name on it. But when you look at name in a legal sense, it is defined as the discriminative appellation of an individual. Well, when you take the word discriminative, okay, we get the word crimen in Latin, which means criminal. So we're automatically deemed to be a criminal. And what's interesting, if you had a court case where someone was after you for a criminal act, if they win the case against you criminally, charging you criminally, usually the next round is they go after you civilly in a court of law. How many people remember the O.J. Simpson trial? That was a biggie. It was out there. That got a lot of publicity. Now, it was interesting on O.J. Simpson. He did get away getting off on the criminal, but it's amazing when you throw $20 million at a bunch of criminal lawyers, they'll find a way to make sure that the glove doesn't fit. But interestingly, the criminal system, if you are charged criminally and they win in a criminal lawsuit, it's a slam dunk to get a civil suit to automatically seize all the assets that you would have had under the name you were bearing civilly, because you bear this legal surname civil status. So what's happened is that even though you had no say, you weren't there at any trial, you were innocent without cause at birth, and someone made a statement with informants against you, you had no ability to say anything, but they hoped that you would act on the presumption of the statement of the informants and then eventually plead guilty, and then they would issue a judgment debt on you that they hoped that you would eventually, at age of election, plead guilty to the name, and therefore you took over the judgment. That's pretty slick, isn't it? An unlimited debt of as much stupidity you could get yourself into in a make-believe world of borrowing from a system that really doesn't exist, because money doesn't grow on trees. Has anybody ever seen a money tree? Are there any money trees out there in reality? That's a hands up or hands down. Are there any money trees out there? That was quick. I'm glad the hands went down really fast on that one. Okay. So there is no money tree. because it doesn't exist in nature. And as we said, build a cartoon character, two trees, a squirrel with a sign up trying to rent out a tree to another squirrel. And of course, the caption would be, "You're nuts," to the other squirrel trying to rent out the tree. Well, it appears being nuts doesn't really stop anything in reality of the world that most people perform in legal, because we've all been duped in general from being caught in a system that will lend you money on a title that's not yours, that's make-believe, that doesn't exist, only is in existence based on it being in your mind. And if you believe in it, then you go ahead on it and then you borrow against it. So you borrow against the title that doesn't exist. It's one big fraud. And that's why the whole money game is fraud, because it works on the concept of basically, in its early days of coin and metals, we forge metal out of the ground, right? Well, we'd have to call that forgery. So, and it gets worse, because even the word coin in its original etymology not only means a counterfeit, but it also meant to needle, of all things. What are the odds of that? So if you have a coin name that someone's coined for legal purposes to collect royalties from, we'll call the royals have a tag name on you. They like to collect the royalties on you using the royal name that's not yours. I also refer to this in many of the seminars as the royal flush in the poker hand, because the house always wins, so it's a royal flush every time, because you are just flushing your time and labor down a legal title that's not yours. And the odds are, the more you've been down that and the more you invested in it, the less you'll believe what I'm saying. What do you think the odds are of a billionaire of legal fictitious debtor dollars who's borrowing from a title that's not his would believe that I'm telling you the truth right now? You think that they would actually come through this? That's a hands up if they will come to a knowledge of what I'm saying, or hands down, they won't. I'd say hands up, they're not going to come to a knowledge of this. Easier for a camel to go through the, what? It said the eye of a needle than for a rich man to enter the kingdom of God, because he's going to get caught in the fiction. Because the more time he's got in it, the less likely he's going to escape. Because he believes he's got all this wealth, and there's no possible way that he's going to give that up. Because he'll say, I've invested so much time and labor into that name. You don't expect me to do that. Now, could you understand why Christ was speaking to basically the poor and the afflicted when he was on the earth? Because they would more likely receive what we're talking about it, because they had already realized they were not going to have wealth. So it was easier to reach them than it would be to reach a wealthy man who actually believed in his legal possession. Even though, you know, I talk about this all the time. I sit in a room, there's lots of books here and things like that. If you believe that I think these are mine, you're totally in a misconception, because I'm not that stupid to believe that they could be mine. What do I do with them to say them they're mine? Oh, I could write owned by a certain name in a book, right? Oh, that's really going to protect the book. Really? Okay. There's tons of things that float through society that people believe were theirs, and they just continue just to disappear in the oblivion. But reality is, it's only a piece of paper. There's nothing to protect that. So what am I going to do? I'm going to literally get a big container now. So I'm going to take all the legal possessions that people think are theirs. I'm going to take everything that possibly I think of, the furniture, everything. In fact, I'll put it in what they call public storage. They even now call that self-storage. That's really selfish storage, because people are pretty selfish that do this. They put everything in storage and they believe it's theirs. They'll even pay to store it there with money that's not theirs. And eventually, after about 12 months, what they have, the junk they have in those public storage units, is basically not even worth what it was after they put it in there, because they paid more to store it than what they actually would say the face value would be of the value if it was ever assessed. Is that pretty stupid? That's why they call it public storage. I'm having a little bit of concern in the future that if these people that are out there don't wake up to the truth and they're thinning the herd, maybe that will bring new meaning to the word public storage or self-storage, because you may be being stored in one of those units, because that seems to be why there seems to be so much production of the building of these concepts of public storage, because they never existed before. So do you think people may be a little bit deceived? Isn't that crazy? The system, you couldn't sold that package to anybody 40 years ago. I'm going to tell you that. They said, what do you mean I'm going to go put that inside a unit there? What do you mean I'm going to pay X amount of dollars a month to store it? Well, maybe we're junk collectors. The money is the drug and the possessions are the drug. And so we basically are basically drugged under some drudgery of false belief. And so the name is the drug, the title is the drug, and they prescribe the name at birth, and then they give you the basically the drug from the prescribed name, and then you carry this and you do everything with this. So it makes sense, prescription drug. And basically the whole world is deceived. And so this is kind of the situation we're in. So if I'm involved in a name or what we call gnome, which leads to a pseudoname, gnome mean pseudo, it's right on these birth certificates. They put gnome name, but we have to look at what does that mean in the legal system. And when it means exactly what we just found out, meaning a denoting a pseudoname or a false name, can you actually benefit from a false name? Wouldn't that require someone to impersonate that name? I'm person eight from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Isn't that what happened in the original Garden of Eden, when before man was at peace with God, and then when he went into occupation, he did something contrary to truth, and he ended up outside the Garden of Eden. That was the last free ride that man had, because it said God drove them out of the garden. He chauffeured them right out. After that, it went from free parking to pay parking. So that's the system we're in. We've gone about an hour and a half. I think I've kind of, you know, laid it on the line of what you're up against in the first stage of this. But if you didn't understand the difference between private and public, then maybe you lost the first hour and a half. And that's why I say go into the previously recorded sessions. You can't be private and public at the same time. And we're going to get into why that's impossible in the next sessions. And going over them every month, I think, is basically allowing us to build a foundation of truth that will not get washed away. You will be able to stand by it. You're not building your foundation of truth on a sandy soil. You're building it on solid rock, okay? The rock of truth. And this is where we're going on this journey. So I hope that you stay with it. Don't give up. It takes time. It's going to take time to absorb. And we're with you on it. This is not easy because of the surrounding of the deceit in the world wide web. What a tangled web we weave when we practice to deceive and are surrounded by lawyers who practice deception through you using a title that's not yours. And they join a club that basically profits from it as they parasite off of you being their host. And so we're trying to prevent you and deal with the parasites. Once you see the truth, the parasites are basically out of existence. And they won't be able to host any further parasiting, blood-sucking draining of you as they've been doing. And we're here to enter basically what Christ or what God had intended for you, because he sent his son to set you free, not to keep you in legal bondage. So anyways, we'll leave it at that for the night. And I appreciate you being on. You know, I know there was a post session. I think it's possibly best that I'll kind of get into more detail on Saturday, but I've just kind of had some adjustments of schedule tonight and I wasn't able to do the 9 o'clock. So, I appreciate everybody being on this session tonight, and we'll definitely see you Saturday. And we're going to have a great event. If you don't know about it, it is on the 13th, of which I believe that Todd's got the flyer up there for anybody who's interested if they're in the area. And certainly if you can travel to it, that'd be great. Love to see you there. There's a lot of people we've never met, you know, face to face, but certainly if you can make it out there, I think it'll be a good event to share, which is Truth No More Lies. And we will end our session with that. And I appreciate being on here as always.
Great. Thank you as always as well, Daniel, for bringing the truth to light and letting us ruminate on this truth and installing it in our hearts. And like you said to me earlier, you know, in the very end game of it, the right words will be given to you through the Spirit of God, right? On what to say.
Absolutely. This is something written on your heart. This is not, you're not going to be saved based on a piece of paper. It's going to be based on what you say and what you do, and you'll find that the elective choice is up to you. And everybody basically has this opportunity. So this is where this journey and the reason where this journey is going, and the reason why we've been doing these sessions for now. You know, I don't know how many people have been on here for the beginning of this, but it's been there for that purpose, to actually at least bring you into a basis of truth and thought, so that you're no longer deceived based on the general population that do not know who they are.
Yeah. And thank you for bringing new content to even this Zoom with that Sophie paper there. And, you know, that's why it's really important for people to go back in what we've got over a year's worth of recordings there. Daniel can't possibly put it all in the one session that you're hearing tonight. And so certainly do your due diligence. Anyway, thank you again, Daniel. I'll let everyone give you a reaction and then we'll close it off for tonight.
Well, thanks again. For me, there'd be just no purpose right now, currently in my life, if I wasn't able to share this truth. So I'm here every week for you, and we'll just continue down this journey. But we are, according to God's word, going to come through this victorious. So please stay with it.
Okay, great. Thank you again. Have a nice evening.
All right. Night. God bless.